Hello, Alan.
Hey, Alan, Stan, I missed your call.
Stanley, how you doing?
Doing just fine, man.
Well, good. You're all prepared for the new year, I suspect.
Well, yeah. Is it prepared for me?
that's the question, all right.
Yeah.
What I wanted to talk to you about was, Needy and I have been interviewing people for the last 20 years. Just getting their impressions and their experiences in the Mount Pleasant community with the intention of someday putting it in a book if we ever get around to it. I never dreamed when we started we'd probably end up interviewing each other in the end. You know, it's been dragged on now for over 20 years.
Yeah.
So you were living with Grandpa and Grandma Buckwalter for a while, right?
Yeah, until I was 8 years old, I lived with Grandma off and on. Because Mama had to take Buddy to the various doctors. She'd have to take him to Baltimore. Plus, we lived out there for a time.
Really?
We lived in a, Mama rented a little house across the road from Pinterest Naval Air Station for a time from a farmer there. And then one time, the last place I remember us living in the colony was down behind Wanger's vineyard.
Oh, okay. Back that long lane?
Yeah. Remember, the house had a smokehouse and everything. It was just a fascinating place.
Yeah, that was just a Wanger's house, I think.
Yeah.
He just died here recently.
Wow.
He was over 100 years old.
Yeah, because, I have long memories of Amos Wanger, actually, because he was the, as my memories are kind of scattered, I remember that Wanger Road was dirt, and that the newspaper boxes for the people who lived on Wanger Road was out on Mount Pleasant Road. And there were only four houses. I think there was the Buckwalter house, and then there was the Wangers that where the road curved, and then Uncle Abe, and then down to the end of the road was the brothers' family.
Brothers.
Wiley and Ruth brothers. I think they weren't part of the Mennonite community, but they had lived back there, I guess, for some time. And she had a wood cook stove. That had it was porcelain and big and. At the end of it had a big tank. Part of it was a big water tank. Where she'd keep that for hot water and keep that loaded. And she was always making cookies and stuff. And what I did, I was maybe, I don't know, 5, 6. I would go out to Mount Pleasant Road and get everybody's newspaper. And then I would bring them, I would deliver them to each house. And when I'd get to the brother's house, Mrs. Brothers would always give me some little treat, cookies or fruit or something. And one time she gave me a rutabaga. And I took that thing home to Grandma. She fixed it, but I couldn't eat it. That was the most awful tasting thing to me at that age, you know.
Did they live, was it right across the road from Abe Buckwalter's house?
No. The road ended in those days at the Wanger field. Wanger's had a field back there between, and then there was just a cow path. So it was down the road a piece from Uncle Abe's and on the right-hand side.
Gotcha.
And also, you know, Uncle Ira Miller, was like the colony barber.
Oh, really?
And it was often Grandma would give me a dime and send me to Uncle Ira's. Now, she'd let me walk all the distance from the Buckwalter house down Wanger, then through the field and over to Uncle Ira's. And Uncle Ira, he raised turkeys, among other things. But he had these hand clippers, and he'd cut my hair. And I was afraid of his turkeys, man.
Really?
Especially the toms, you know, they can get a little aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of my memories. And another was the Wangers boys loved to have me come over and mess with the cows. You know, they made fun of me sometime, but I remember going helping run the cows in for milking.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like the road, the farm road back by their pastures and stuff, was like perpetually wet or something. I remember knee-deep mud and running back there and getting the cows, you know, and just having a time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So one day, was it Herbert or Harold?
Yeah. Herbert.
Herbert. Herbert and one of the other ones. They were constantly having problems with possums getting in their chicken house.
Mm-hmm.
And a possum would do a terrible damage to a chicken. They found this possum. I was like 6 years old. They found this big old possum, and Herbert took him out and killed it. They killed it, but killed it by breaking its head, chop it in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave it to me, and Stanley, you take this over to your grandma and let her bake it for you. It's real good. I took the end of that possum's tail, and its head was dragging the ground. That's how big it was.
Mm.
And I dragged that thing over to Grandma, and said, Grandma, look what the Wanger boys gave me, the Harold gave me. There's this possum. Says it's good to eat. Grandma had she got a little perturbed. To say the least. And I remember, you know, back where Grandpa Buckwalter used to have his chicken houses, there was a little ditch back there.
Mm-hmm.
And she made me drag that possum back there and throw it in the ditch. And Grandpa was the, and the Wanger boys called me Possum from that day on. That was my nickname from then on. And Grandpa... Grandpa was a broom maker, Grandpa Buckwalter. Mm-hmm. And that shop was in that garage and building in the behind the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved to go in that to the old shop and look at those broom making machines. You know, they just fascinated me.
Mm-hmm. And, did he do anything besides making brooms for a living? Did he farm or anything, or was that his?
He raised chickens.
Oh, okay.
He raised fryers. That was his main income. But I think each family had some kind of specialty. Just like Uncle Ira was the colony barber, and Grandpa, he was the broom maker, but he probably made brooms to sell elsewhere. I don't know. Because
mm-hmm.
I was like 5 years old when he passed. It was mm-hmm. 1945, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember Grandpa Buckwalter very well. What you see in the pictures, I mean, that's exactly how he looked.
Really?
And, yeah. And that beard scared me, you know. And he spoke broken English. He spoke with a real heavy German accent. He and Grandma Buckwalter both.
Really?
And, because, I mean, that was when in Pennsylvania, they did come from Pennsylvania, what, 1913?
Mm-hmm.
They had a big family and all, but they were from the colony area up there in Lancaster County.
Do you know why they moved here?
A lot of people did. Things got kind of hard up in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I think there had been a drought or something, but they needed their land. You know, they needed space. They had, here he had 11 kids.
Ah.
And a lot of daughters, and he's probably related to everybody up there. You know, you're going to get husbands for your daughters, you know.
Yeah.
That's never mentioned, but I know like half of the daughters, I think, went back to Lancaster County area.
Mm-hmm.
But, in the Wanger, in the Buckwalter house, was Grandma had one half of the house, and Aunt Nettie had the other half. And Grandma and Grandpa, they lived in a couple of rooms.
Okay. Which half did they live in?
All right. If you're looking at the house from the road,
yeah,
Grandma lived on the right-hand side of the house, and Aunt Nettie lived on the left-hand side of the house. Because
mm-hmm.
you know there's a stairwell that goes right up the center of the house.
Yeah.
Or did. And if you, when you go up that stairs, to the left, there was a little room, and that was my room whenever I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And because it wasn't the bed until I was like, I don't know, Uncle Freddie did until he was like 14 or 15, Mama did, and I did too. But I slept on Grandma and wouldn't waste anything, so she made a mattress out of corn chucks and a burlap bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I slept on a mattress of burlap and corn chucks. But you know, and it was fascinating to me, you know, the Pennsylvania Dutch, and Grandma Keffer had a little bit of an accent, but she didn't have a German accent. It was a unique accent that they had in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Stanley. That's how she would say it, Stanley. But Grandma Buffalo, Ach, weiß. When your daddy and mama got married, mama bought a fuchsia colored suit.
Mm-hmm.
Now fuchsia, you know, that's about as shocking pink as you want to get.
Mm-hmm.
And reportedly, mama says that Grandma Buckwalter looked at Grandma Keffer and says, "Ach, my Alice, you aren't going to let Betty be better dressed like that at Johnny's wedding, are you?" And probably Grandma may have replied, "I can't do anything about this girl." Mama was kind of rebellious. But Grandma Buckwalter was one of the most fascinating people because of her accent and because she was so feisty.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Oh. She was a controller, bro. If the family has a reputation for being controlling of their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And Grandma Buckwalter, trust me, very, and she took impeccable care of Grandpa. Him being diabetic and osteoarthritis and all that stuff, he was
mm-hmm.
tremendous pain, you know, his last couple of years. But I remember they had that big table in the dining room. As you, when you went in that side door and you go in that room, this what was the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
There was a parlor off to the left. But there was a big table, and I forget how many of us sat around that thing. But a lot of meals would be Grandma Keffer, Grandma and Grandpa, or Grandpa and Grandma and Grandpa Buckwalter, and maybe I never saw Nettie, but
really?
Other members. Yeah, I rarely saw Nettie. So she was a nurse, and I'd see her come and go,
mm-hmm.
but I never visited her or anything. She was an outcast.
How come?
Because she had Uncle John out of wedlock.
Was it John? Was that his name?
Yeah. John Buckwalter.
Who was his name?
I have no idea who the father was. I don't.
I asked my mother once, and she said it was Dr. Fentress. Or a doctor at Fentress, where she was his nurse or something.
Yeah. But, you know, in her day, that was a big no-no, especially in life.
Mm-hmm.
Community like that. So, and I went to see Uncle John. Yes, you had a question.
If she was an outcast, did they not speak to her or anything, or just?
Well, she was shunned.
Oh, really?
It seemed to me because she never, man, I don't think I ever saw her in church.
Mm-hmm.
She was very quiet. Just never heard or seen her. You know, I saw her sometimes through a window, but she stayed to herself.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're kind of like that anyway.
Was her son there then? He would have been, what, older than you, right?
Oh, goodness, yeah, because that's our second cousin. I'd be Harold's first cousin.
Yeah.
Harold McWalters. Uncle John went in the Army at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
He spent over 30 years in the Army. retired as a warrant officer. Mm-hmm. I forget which grade. I think he was W04. I went when Virginia and I got married. We took our honeymoon to Anderson, South Carolina, and that's where Uncle John was living.
Mm-hmm.
He and Rose, and they were very gracious. And Uncle John was, he was a joker, a very funny guy. And we talked, and I said, "Tell me, John, I forget the question I asked him." He said, "Well, Stanley," he says, "every family got to have a black sheep, and I come from a mighty big family." He was an alcoholic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when he joined in the Army, he spent 13 years in the Panama Canal Zone.
Good Lord.
When they surveyed it,
mm-hmm.
and getting ready to build the canal, he was a mule skinner.
Mm.
And he said, come payday, he'd get drunk. He'd stay in trouble for it. So finally, one day, his commander called him in and says, "Buckholder, you're a hard worker when you're sober. What I'm going to do is pay every payday. I'm going to give you a 3-day pass. You go get as wild drunk as you want to, but you got to stay sober the rest of the time." And that's kind of the way he worked it. Except for he said he was drinking like a fifth of whiskey a week.
Mm.
And sometimes could do it in a day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was a serious alcoholic.
Did he have any children?
Yes. They had two children. A daughter. Oh, no, the only one I know about is a daughter.
What was her name?
And I don't remember.
Mm. Was it Phyllis?
That's the only time I saw Uncle John.
Mm. Okay.
It was when I went to see him, because, he lived there and he was all over the place. But back to Mount Pleasant, that Wanger Road thing was one of my big memories, and the other was the church.
Mm-hmm.
How bats would get loose in the church sometimes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And I remember, I was maybe five at this point, Vacation Bible School. You know, at the end of Vacation Bible School, you always had the big program.
Yeah.
And it was at night, and we had it. And my grandma, and the old pews, you know, those slatted pews? And a bat got loose in the church. Man, Stanley, stay down. So I was going to get under it. And I think it was Harold and one of the Wanger boys did something about the bat. They chased it out or something. But it was, mm-hmm. it was so funny, the people's reaction to the bat.
Who was the daddy? Then? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, Amos.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Amos, well, it seems like yours. And Amos is one of those people you never forget, you know, that steel hair of his, and he ain't talking in the back of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like that's really a Rockingham County kind of accent than Stanton up in that area. You know, I wanted to talk about it yet. And I kind of feared him at one time, you know. The old Miller store was a one-room school.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you go to school there?
Yes. I don't know if it was kindergarten or first grade, but I went to my stay with grandma. I went to it there a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And the next door to it was a house, and that's where we had our Bible classes.
Mm.
But there was all the grades right there in that one room, and there was a little platform up at the front of the room and a desk, and that's where Amos had his desk, you know, and I sat right along the chalkboard was down one, but I remember sat on that side. They had on the other side of the room, towards the outside of the building was a sink, a pump. And so what we'd do is they had this powdered soap that when it came to lunchtime, we'd all, if you got in the line and we're around, you washed your hands
mm-hmm.
before you eat lunch. And most of us brought lunch from home, you know. Grandma made me a little sack lunch. We'd go outside and eat. Well, I don't know if I was mouthy or what, but sometimes kids would pick on me, especially the girls. And there was one person who took up for me, and that was Robert Mast.
Really?
Yeah. See, he was probably a teenager by that time, or young teenager, but I remember Robert so vividly by that day. He would usually take up for me and defend me. And
He's still around. I just talked to him the other day.
I'll be. I remember him, you know, I was doing a lot of preaching when he was the overseer.
Uh-huh.
And Robert and I, we got on real well. He was just a very kind person. I mean, just
he was.
Wonderful guy, you know. Let's see, the school, and I think that's Freddie went there. You see, like, when I was living with Grandma, like, Freddie is only, like, 11 years older than me or something like that. I know that Marvin and Freddie were young teenagers at home when I was staying with Grandma so much.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad was dating your mom.
Was he living there?
I remember that. Your dad and Freddie and Marvin all lived there at the house. And your dad lived at the house until he and your mom got married in 1945. Grandma, they got kind of irritated with me sometimes because Grandma made them take me places with them. Now, Marvin and Johnny were the ones who went places. Freddie was quiet and reserved and retiring. Freddie used to sit me on his lap and read Bible stories to me.
Really?
Yeah. I was the oldest grandchild, you know, so I'd get special treatment sometimes. But I used to see Johnny go out, your dad go out, or Johnny go out I wanted to get in the car and go with him.
Mm-hmm.
One night, he says, "No, Sammy, you can't go tonight. I'm going out with my girlfriend." I said, So when he wasn't looking, I slipped out. Nobody's looking. I slipped out the house, got in the car in the back seat, and got down on the floor and hid. And when he stopped in front of your mom's folks' house on Mount Pleasant Road, I looked up out through the window, you know, and saw him go up to the house and pick, get her, you know, escort her out to the car and sit down. When they got to the church, the big gate for the Mennonite youth at the time was going to Literary Society.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they went. Well, when he got to Literary Society, he found
that held at the church?
Yeah. It was the church or a building behind it, I mean, I don't remember any buildings behind the church.
Yeah,
so it had to be the church. Yeah. And it might have been Miller School. But he, when he found me, he was not happy. He was not happy. And but they took me in. And he takes me home. And he let me know, no uncertain terms, I better never do that again.
Yeah. But
his grandma was worried, too.
He let you stay and took you home afterwards?
They let me stay with him, let me be with him.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wasn't going to leave me out in the car.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, there was some people speaking and something about, they studied the Robert's Rules of Order.
Right.
If you remember the literary, you know, and so that was kind of interesting. But then we took me home. My grandma was kind of upset too because I had kind of disappeared on her. But that was and John Marvin would always take me to sports stuff. He was perpetually playing baseball or softball.
Mm-hmm.
He was a heck of a pitcher.
Really?
And,
I thought he was a shortstop.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a pitcher.
Well, he could pitch, but he was shortstop, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot about that. And when I was like 10 or 12, I was over visiting one time, and he took me out to the his practice with him. And by then, by 12, I had a heck of an arm. I could throw the ball considerably far. Now he let me get out there and scrimmage a little bit, and hey, you got a good arm there, but you can't throw it straight. Left-handed, you know. But another memory for me is with the sewing circles.
Mm-hmm.
At the church. Well, it's the quilting sewing circle.
Right.
Especially. And these women, Alan, I don't think any of them spoke English.
Yeah.
I hear all this German, you know, and of course, the one thing that ain't any different in German is my name, Stanley. Mm-hmm. And once in a while, I hear Grandma, my name come up, and my ears would burn because I couldn't understand what they were saying. You know, what are they saying about me, you know? But those ladies would talk as fast as they sewed. And they were excellent. Grandma Buckwalter was a very noted quilter.
Mm-hmm.
She quilted up into her 90s.
Where did they have the sewing circle?
Say again?
Where did they have the sewing circle?
At the church.
Oh, okay.
In the all-purpose room.
Okay.
Yep. One of the rooms there. And I remember the frames very well. I can almost smell some of the scents because they'd bring them a lunch with them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the meals. You learned how to eat standing up because there wasn't always a place to sit. So you knew how to take care of your flatware and everything. And the food, it seemed like to me everybody was a good cook. Shoe fly pie, I don't remember too much about, but man, fried chicken and all kinds of good stuff. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you remember any of the ladies, the names of any of the ladies who would have been at Sewing Circle?
No. Names don't stick with me very well.
Mm-hmm.
If faces do. I remember choristers. I remember the four-part harmony.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 9 years old before I knew the churches had organs and pianos. Because, you know, when we didn't have a quarterly for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they had quarterlies for anybody. They used the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So here when I was 9 years old, my uncle, my natural father's brother-in-law, mm-hmm. Leland Waters Jr., or Sr., Leland H. Waters was a Southern Baptist minister and evangelist. And he worked with the whole mission board. Also, he was a missionary. And he was quite an orator. And he would do this when he's talking to them. And he would speak so well. And he could pray, man, he prayed the angels down, you know. But he was also a crooked businessman.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
But anyway, well, I didn't trust him. He smoked cigars, so I didn't trust him. He also wouldn't let me live with him. He kept putting me in foster homes and stuff if he had to charge me for a while there.
Mm-hmm.
When he put me in a home for boys in Richmond, a Baptist home for boys. This couple ran it. And the first Sunday at that Baptist church, a Sunday school lesson. Now, understand that my first, like, 8 years, I spent a lot of time with Grandma, so I'm learning about the Bible in a Mennonite church.
Right.
And the lesson, the teacher introduced the lesson and started teaching. I knew more about the lesson than she did. Because of what I had been taught in a Mennonite church.
Mm-hmm.
And being into, you know, the preaching and everything, and Grandma would do some instructing once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma, the first person I can ever remember praying for me was Grandma Keffer.
Really?
Yeah.
What did she pray?
I don't recall. She would always pray for me about my life and stuff. You know, she could be kind and she could be severe. it's like I said, what I said about Grandma Buckwater, sitting at the table. I'm switching gears here. Mm-hmm. Sitting at the table, since Grandpa Buckwater had certain restrictions on his diet because of his diabetes,
mm-hmm.
She put his food on his plate.
Mm.
She chose what food he would eat. And if he reached for something he wasn't supposed to have, she'd tap his hand saying, nine. Young, nine. Yeah, my goodness, boy. I mean, but she ruled the roof. That 4'11" lady ruled the roof. But that was back in those days. That was respected.
Yeah.
And, of course, she was a very powerful little woman. So, for me, I had this mother thing worked out. My mama was mama. Grandma Keffer was big mama, and Grandma Buckwater was little mama.
So you had two mamas while you were there.
I had three mothers. And Grandma just really, she and Mama didn't get along too well because maybe they were too much alike, I don't know. The Grandma was very, very sharp. Very smart.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught me the first German word I ever learned was cow, how to say cow, coo. And when I was a child, and probably when you were, there was still a lot of German spoke in the colony.
Yeah, my mother and her parents always spoke it, which was very irritating to my dad, if he didn't speak it.
Yeah, because, Harold, he learned it, but Harold said that Grandpa Buckwalter would set his grandchildren on his lap and read them Bible stories from mm-hmm. German. And he would always do it in German. So you had to learn German.
Mm.
Grandpa Buckwalter had a reputation for being a man of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
As feisty as Grandma was, Grandpa was gentle, I guess. But I don't know if you know about the legend. I mean, he supposedly had calluses on his knees from the time he spent in prayer for his children, his children's children, until the fourth generation.
You know, I've heard that, and it's ironic that I was looking around church the other day, and at least 50% of the people there are Buckwalter descendants of his.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're half of the colony, man. I mean, you've got all his daughters, and they have a bunch of kids, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, then Millers and all. I can remember Harold Buckwalter being the chorister.
Oh, really? He would have been very young then.
Yeah, he was a teenager. Harold, I used to spend time down at Uncle Abe's because Aunt Roberta was, she was quite a person.
Oh, really?
Very, very nurturing. And they were so good to me. And of course, Uncle Abe, I don't know what it is about the Buckwalter men, but they have a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And Uncle Abe was just this wonderful person. He'd tell stories. Because he was a ferry boat captain on the Elizabeth River. And then I guess when they got rid of the ferry boats, he became a toll collector in one of the tunnels.
But yeah, he ran one of the tunnels, and then they put him in charge of the expressway toll when they built the expressway from Virginia Beach.
Yeah. He had that way of, they'd bite the lower lip. Yep, Stanley. And he had that tenor voice, man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember reading in the book about Mount Pleasant that, you know, how the men pulled him in. And my mom says that the young colony men, like just before the Second World War, Uncle Abe and a bunch of them, made moonshine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were moonshiners. They had their rebellious time. They had their their own form of Rumspringer.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I remembered about the colony too, not one thing, but another thing, was the love of the kids, for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was in and out of the colony, so it would be very obvious to me.
Right.
And like we lived in Copeland Park for a time during the war. And
was that Norfolk?
I was over here in Newport News.
Oh, okay.
I remember, and it was like there were duplexes and quadplexes, single story. One day, this one go play with these kids that lived a couple of houses down, and the mother came out and grabbed the son, pulled him aside, and says, "Don't you play with those boys? They're from a broken home." And Mama wasn't even divorced yet. I mean, they were legal separated because my daddy made sure he stayed out of the country so she couldn't divorce him.
Mm.
But that hurt me like crazy. You know, I didn't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I was an outcast because my parents were not together.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would go over to the colony, over to Mount Pleasant,
mm-hmm.
and there was so much love shown for the children. The children were considered very important, it seems. It seemed to me, my impression.
Yeah.
And that, if it had not been for that, I don't know how I would have turned out. I turned out, I kind of had my problems anyway. But that, I have never forgotten that. The amount of love that was shown. And it was pretty isolated, although they did a lot of business with people outside the colony.
Mm-hmm.
It was the whole culture thing, you know, with the plain suit. Because I remember seeing Harold in his first straight cut or plain cut.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was living with Oliver, I was having one made for me. I was baptized by Truman Brunk in December of 1954.
Really?
Truman Brunk Sr. I was living with Anna May and Oliver.
Hmm.
I lived with them for a year working on the dairy farm there and living with them because my mom's stepdad had so many problems. It was, but the preaching, it seemed to me that Amos was angry all the time. I don't know. It's just his severe way of speaking.
He did have a stentorian way of preaching. It was difficult to follow him.
But what you didn't want, because more than one man was prepared to preach
mm-hmm.
Sunday. Because they had, like four people, I guess, who could do the preaching. And you hoped that one of them, when it came prayer time, would not pray out loud because you're going to preach his sermon. And I remember being down on your knees, knowing, when are we going to get up? And night services, sleeping in the pew, because you're a little kid, you've been running all day. Living with grandma, I had a garden. I was like seven then. This was towards the end of my staying with grandma a lot.
Right.
She got from the Wangers a cultivator that you pushed. And I was just big enough to push that thing. I had to reach up for the handles, but I was kind of big for my age.
Mm-hmm.
I raised tomatoes and corn, and she helped me lay it out, I believe. But I remember Uncle Freddie take a salt shaker and put it in his hip pocket and go out in among the tomatoes and pull him a tomato and eat it out there in the garden. If you faced the house, the garden was to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a coal pile just in front of the building that had been Grandpa's workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember mints grew around that coal pile.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Grandma making mint tea from that. I mean, that was another of my Mount Pleasant memories. Mm-hmm. But the people... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The people and how they treated each other and everything. Well, if you were compliant and they were wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see sometimes the times they would help somebody who was having a hard time, you know.
Yeah.
There were those folks who were judgmental and the folks who were good, and they just that's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
But the first name basis, I still like that to this day. Everybody being on a first name basis. Later the 8 years I spent at Warwick River, after coming back up here and everything,
mm-hmm.
I was actually able to prepare me for credentials. Lloyd Weaver was trying real hard. Of course, me being a divorced man, it was kind of hard to do. But I did a lot of preaching out and stuff. And Lloyd had been influencing me when I was 16. So he's I remember the way I was treated. Normally was people were very kind to me.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't supposed to be vindictive, and there was just a whole different atmosphere. I'm back in the colony now. Just it was like a different world, Alan. And I'd leave there and be out, and it just didn't seem real, you know. But I loved it over there.
Well, when were you born? What was your birth?
1940. April 14th, 1940.
1940, okay.
Yeah.
So you'd have been there from the late 40s to the early 50s then.
Actually, we lived over there when I was like 3 or 4 years old. So
mm-hmm.
actually the mid-40s.
Okay.
The mid-40s to actually the late 40s. Because by the time I was 8... When I was 8 years old, I think it was the last time I stayed with Grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wound up going to that. I was eight. I was, my uncle had put me with a family that owned a hog farm.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a Baptist family.
Oh, okay.
And was in Richmond.
Okay.
Because he lived in Richmond,
mm-hmm.
and it was my daddy's family is from Richmond area, and I mean I was mistreated not by the some well even some there were four of us that were foster boys,
mm-hmm.
and we were fed one food and their children were fed something else. They'd pick up food from restaurants in Richmond to feed their hogs,
mm-hmm.
The day also. And they'd go through it to find anything that was edible, and that's what we ate.
Jeez.
And I remember telling Grandma I didn't want any limp carrots. They were stale carrots, but they were edible. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them tried to do a sexual advance on me, and I kicked him in the gonads. His mama spanked me for that. She wouldn't believe he'd done anything wrong. But... one day, your daddy showed up. Mama came up, I think, and to see me.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be 48 after Leonard was born, and to show me Leonard. And I kind of let her know things weren't really all that great. And pretty soon, here comes your daddy, and he had a delivery of sedan delivery.
Yeah, I remember that.
All right, yeah, and I remember that vehicle. Yay. And he came up, took me to Grandma. I stayed with her, so that'd be 48 would be the last time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, after that, somehow wound up back in Richmond with my uncle and ran a home for boys. Well, it was gang rape, six boys, and threatened to kill me if I told anybody. Screwed my mind up royally.
That would be traumatic.
And I was given a week to go. I could go to four schools started. They let me. Each boy could go stay with a family if the family wanted them.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom and stepdad had moved down to North Carolina because he'd been laid off from all the shipyards up here because the government had stopped spending money on shipping
mm-hmm.
on the ships. And so he decided to be a farmer, and we were sharecroppers. I went down to see Mama, and when I told her how things were in Richmond, she called Uncle Leland that he would send me back. My mama was a fighter, Bo.
mm-hmm.
And she was a controller. It's one reason why I went in the service. But that last time living with Grandma, now I'm 8 years old, I know a little bit more, see a little bit more, and I wanted to stay with Grandma, but mm-hmm. she couldn't afford to keep me.
Yeah, where was Granddaddy at this time? Was he in Hinton? I mean, Huntington?
I don't know where he was. He would show up once in a while.
Mm-hmm. What was your impression?
I didn't know Grandpa. I remember him coming in one time and brought ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And then I never saw him again. I didn't really get to see Grandpa that much until I was living in Anna Mae and Oliver. Well, no, before that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 13, I went to live with Grandma and Grandpa because I just couldn't take home very much. And
right.
I was 2 years behind in school when I started sixth grade, and the principal at Parkview Elementary wrote a note home to my mom the second week of school, said, I'm going to put Stanley in the seventh grade, whether you like it or not. He's too big and too bright to be 2 years behind. So I skipped the sixth grade. And I went to then, at the same time, I went out to live with Grandma and Grandpa. And I was there for 3 months, and I could not get along with Grandpa.
That was in Huntington?
Yeah. Mm. Grandpa, his Irish would always show. He loved the professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him taking me to see a couple of them. Somebody named Wild Red Berry was one of them. And a chief, that's this Indian guy. You know, there's always an Indian and somebody else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just staying with Grandma and Grandpa and then back home. And then out with Anna Mae and Oliver. I kicked around from pillar to post.
Sounds like
growing up. I did. I had to learn how to get along with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned one thing, Alan. The old folks were the ones who had the money and who controlled everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I became very adept at getting along with the older people.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I didn't get along with my kids around me sometimes. Because I was going to be obedient, because there was rewards involved in that.
Yeah.
And I was a very emotional kid. I lived with Fred Slaball for a few months.
Who was Fred Slaball?
Fred Slaball lived. He rented one of Uncle Oliver's dad. Owned a couple of farms.
Uh-huh.
He owned a farm that Oliver was on, but he also owned another farm in Denby, all about where Stony Brook is.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred rented that, ran 40 there. And I worked with Uncle Oliver for a year, of course, living on the dairy farm, but I got a reputation for being a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
A little slow, but I was hard. I worked hard. And he had Nevin Steiner working for him, and he had stopped that. So I roomed and boarded. I quit school. He found out I'd quit school. So I went over to live with him and work. Well, moving before that, because that was the only way to do it, you know, living way out there.
Yeah.
At that time, that was way out there. And the first day, he said, Stanley, you need your education. And that's one thing Mennonites are very strong on, is education.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'll make a deal. As he was going to do $13 a week in room and board. He says, I'll pay you $11 a week room and board, and you go to school. You go back to school. So I did. I enrolled at Warwick High School, and I rode as a quarter to ride the Greyhound bus to school.
Hmm.
And it's, I had discovered girls. No, I discovered girls.
We all do it that age.
I discovered girls way back, but girls were beginning to discover me. And so I was out late at night sometimes, and getting up at 4:30 in the morning wasn't an easy thing. So, and Fred was not a very good business manager, so at the time,
mm-hmm.
so he laid me off. You know, but I had a time, man. We were going to Huntington Mennonite. They went to Huntington Mennonite Church.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I got to meet Lloyd Weaver,
mm-hmm.
and Lloyd Jr. And he was the pastor at Huntington.
Right.
And I had this, at 16, I mean, I had a tenor voice that wouldn't quit. You know, I could get real high.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was Lloyd, Myron Ross, Fisher, and I forget who the other one was. Oh, John David Yoder, I think was the other one. And there were the four young men. They were a quartet. They took me under their wing, and though they didn't need me, they pulled me into the group,
mm-hmm.
and I sang this real high tenor for them,
mm.
and they nurtured me. It's just that nurturing I would receive any time I was in among the Mennonites,
mm-hmm.
was what kept drawing me. Though I couldn't live up to the standard, you know.
Yeah.
I had this idea that you had to be perfect or something. Living with grandma and mama said it was like when I was three and 4 years old, I would get a box, a wood box, and I'd grab a book and I'd stand on that box and I'd lead singing. I'd imitate the chorister.
Mm-hmm.
And after I did that, I'd mumble, so I'd do something. Then I'd preach. I'd get that book up again, and I'd preach. When I was 3 or 4 years old. So Grandma said I was going to be a preacher or a lawyer or an actor. Because did you know that Grandma Keffer read the horoscopes every day in the newspaper?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
For curiosity, or did you take them seriously?
Well, Pennsylvania Dutch were pretty serious about folk culture, you know,
mm-hmm.
hexes and stuff. Because she read it there, Stanley, let's see what says your horoscope is today. And she says, you're going to be a preacher, a lawyer, or an actor. She said, for two of those, you got to lie for a living, so you're going to have to be a preacher. But I knew, in that church, Mount Pleasant, I sensed and knew at a very early age, at 4, 5, 6, something like that, that God was calling me to the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, you got to be too perfect. I was very extreme in my thinking, and so I kept running from it.
Mm-hmm.
I kept running from it. But I had that nurturing there. And it's still very dear to me. The way the teaching I got, when I finally surrendered at age 39 to God, the Holy Spirit opened my memory. And a lot of what I would know at that time was what I had learned as a child in the Mennonite mm-hmm. Church. So that my theology is a mix of Pentecostal and Anabaptist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very, very Anabaptist, as a matter of fact. The ethics, it's all, and the peace, where do I stand on peace? And I remember hearing so much about that. Of course, that became the litmus test, I guess, in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I've come to my own personal conviction on it. When Jesus said that, what's he doing? He's talking to people who know about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when he said, if one person slaps you on the cheek, turn the other also. I believed that, you know, it meant literally turn the other cheek, which, by the way, Uncle Freddie did.
Oh,
and he served his conscientious objector time at Eastern State Hospital.
That's right, he did.
And there was a Jehovah's Witness in there serving his conscientious objector time. The Jehovah's Witnesses were conscientious objectors to the fact that you owe no allegiance to anyone but God.
Mm-hmm.
But for Mennonites, it was not just that, but that you're not supposed to kill people, you know.
Right.
And not supposed to bear arms. And he says to Uncle Freddie, it goes this way, Kefir, come on. You're here like I am just to stay out of the military. You really believe in this? What did Jesus say? And Uncle Freddie said, if a man strikes you on one cheek, turn the other also. What would you do if I slap you upside the face? Jesus said, if a man strikes you on the cheek, turn the other also. The man hauled off and hit him hard upside the drum. He was like at the end of the hall, back against the wall. Uncle Freddie slid down the wall, and he's getting back up. And the guy says, what are you going to do, Kefir, now if I hit you with the other? He says, Jesus said, turn the other cheek. If a man strikes you on the cheek, turn the other to him also. The man reached back to slap, hit him on the other side of his, and could not.
Hmm.
His head was like something grabbed his arm or something. He stopped and turned and left. He never bothered Uncle Freddie again. But Uncle Freddie took his faith extremely serious. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very serious guy. But when Jesus said that, I believe he was talking to us as individuals.
Right.
That that should be your individual faith. If a man, we're not supposed to strike back.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you strike my wife, now that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
So trying to get the government to, it went to trying to make the government become non-resistant, that I think is carrying it too extreme.
Yeah.
But because we're supposed to be by our example.
Well, and Paul writes that the government is ordained by God in order to provide peace and protection.
Yep. So. Yeah, that was one that the church had to come in. I know, when I asked Uncle Oliver about it, Oliver taught me how to take notes in church and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, what about, you know, police? And he read me the thing, you know, from Romans 13. The police do not bear that, the officers do not bear the arms for nothing. I mean, it's, he said, well, he was predestinationist. He said, that is their destination. That is their calling. That is, they are predestined for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how he managed to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the peace issue, really, I saw it before I left White River. I saw the peace issue becoming the point where the leaders were willing to accept almost anything if you were against serving in the military.
Yeah.
And you know, I said, wait a minute. I talked with Lloyd. I said, this is it looks to me like, you know, the intellectualism is getting so Stanley, just, you know.
Yeah.
But I believe that. Like my students, when I taught at Youth Challenge, you know, they said, well, what about this bus ban? I said, my conviction is when Jesus said that, that's what he meant.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to swing back when you are personally attacked.
Yeah.
Because if you look throughout the entire New Testament, Jesus never struck back.
Mm-hmm.
But when Jesus saw other people mistreated, he took action.
Mm-hmm.
Such as when he went into the temple and in the court of the Gentiles and saw it being desanctified by the selling of the animals and the money exchanges, the crooked money exchanges, not giving fair exchange and stuff. And one day in the class, I said, and he turned the tables over, and the tables were probably planks on barrels. I didn't even think what I was doing. I just, to my left hand, I just came up under this table I had in the
mm-hmm.
front of the classroom. It was a composition board top.
Yeah.
A thick one. And I just slapped it. It did a complete flip in the air and tore the legs away from the tabletop. I had done a martial arts thing and didn't even know it because I didn't stop to think. I just went through it. And I was pretty strong in those days, but it floored me. But boy, did it make a
impression. It did.
I didn't have any trouble with any student, man, for about 3 months. Don't mess with Brother Stan, he's bad. But that Jesus, man, we are supposed to live it personally.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's ironic in the Mount Pleasant Church here. Some of our people get in trouble with other Mennonites sometimes. Not in trouble, but they kind of look down their nose because we live so close to the military, this congregation is no longer non-resistant. And if somebody from the church joins the military, they offer them prayers and, you know, wish them well. And we've got members of the church now who are in the military, so they've kind of dropped it in this congregation.
Yeah, I kind of saw that. And then, of course, when Harold's son-in-law became a cop, I mean, his daughter married a cop, but yeah, it was a horrible thing, man, the way he was beat.
That really was. That was terrible.
Yeah, and Mount Pleasant was because it was so isolated. Very, very conservative.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It was a loving community
mm-hmm.
for the most part. Warwick River wound up being this conservative one. Because when God told me to go back to Mennonite Church back in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
It was 81, 82. I said, can I go to Huntington? You know, no, he told me go to Mount Pleasant. And now I mean to Warwick. And Warwick was the conservative congregation over here.
Hmm.
But I had been there when I lived with Uncle Oliver.
Right.
So I remember most of the people and stuff. And to this day, I miss the four-part harmony. I know it's just another way to worship.
Yeah.
There's just something about that four-part harmony, the chords that you form with the voices mm-hmm. and everything that just resonates.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is. And once you've sung it or experienced it, there's nothing quite like it.
I think it was Sissy said something about the family should get together and make an album.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm ready. I'd love to.
Yeah, I would too.
But Mount Pleasant. I mean, Mount Pleasant is very dear to my memories, and just all those times of watching.
Did you have any interaction with other folks, the Burgess or the Laymans or the Wangers?
Oh yeah, well the Wangers. Not as an adult.
Right. I mean,
because you know the distance. Yeah, but as a child, yeah. Because I would play over at the Wangers a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin worked for the Wangers.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
He was a milker. Because they, at the time, everything was milked by hand.
Right.
And Marvin, he milked a cow, man. I learned how to do that when I worked for Fred, because he had a cow come fresh with mastitis.
Mm-hmm.
And he had strictly a pipeline, so I had to milk that cow twice a day.
Mm.
And man, my arms got my forearms got up to 15 inches because that was something. But yeah, I've the kids. Oh, Tommy Tenerfoss.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Tenerfoss. Remember, the Tenerfosses had goats.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy had this cart that he would hook his goat up to and give kids a ride.
Uh-huh.
And of course, he wasn't that much older than us, but he made maybe 10 years or so, five or 7 years.
Did they live back beside Uncle Ira then?
No, the Tenerfosses lived right out on the corner of Mount Pleasant Road and Wanger Road.
Okay, a little white house there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tenerfosses lived there, and you went down the road to Peace, and Aunt Ruthie was on the right.
Yep.
And that's another memory. I used to love to go to Aunt Ruthie's. Grandma would let me walk down there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt Ruthie had all these National Geographic magazines. I guess Uncle Tommy subscribed to them, but, I mean, bunches and bunches, all of them. And I just love sitting hours and hours looking at those things.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in Aunt Naomi. Aunt Naomi lives a little bit further down the road on the left. And on all, that triggers other memories. The young men would gather at Aunt Naomi's, Aunt Chester's, on some nights. And do bluegrass.
That's right.
Because Chester and Ray, Chester and Ray both played instruments. You know, one played mm-hmm. the fiddle, and Chester or Ray, one played the fiddle, and the other played banjo or guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, one of them's sons now have a group of their own. But that's where I got a love for bluegrass. And Uncle Marvin would come in there sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd walk down there, and of course, Annabelle was only 2 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd go see Annabelle, played with her a lot, because we were so close in age.
Right. Did you know Margaret Kiff?
Who?
Margaret Kiff.
No, that doesn't. Okay. Well, probably may have, but the name doesn't ring a bell.
Right.
Because they knew mostly the first names and.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the second grade, I lived with Grandma for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the new school, the two-room school.
Oh, okay.
I was in the second grade, and there were only two of us in the second grade. And the other was Philip Miller.
For heaven's sakes.
Because we're about the same age.
Mm-hmm.
But we were the only two in the second grade.
Who was your teacher then?
I don't remember.
Hmm.
It wasn't one of the mass girls, because the mass girls were teenagers by then.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked to tease boys. I remember there was a girl in the school who somebody, one of the kids says, she's part black, she's part Negro. How do you know? You can tell by her fingernails. I was trying to figure out, what their attitude towards people of color was. But I can remember we would do shadowgrams.
Mm-hmm.
The outhouse, we discovered that you could, it actually formed like a pinhole camera.
Uh-huh.
And there was this hole in the side of the wall, and you, wait a minute, I see images here. So we took chalk and chalked it up so it'd be good and white. And kids go out and do things, and we'd watch them. And they'd say, hey, look here. We discovered the pinhole camera.
For heaven's sake.
Hey, And that school, I remember that one, man. But I wasn't there very long.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember they could move the wall, and that's where you had literary and had all kinds of activities there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was an experience. The last Mennonite school I went to was Warwick River, living with Anna Mae Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
We took eight academic subjects during the year. So what we did, it took half a year of science and half a year of health.
Right.
Which in the public schools was 1 year.
Mm.
So we did a full year and one half of a year. And Bible, of course, was one of our subjects, but I finished the year with a 3.9 average and Judy with a 4.0. And that just galled Anna Mae that I could be anywhere. She didn't think anybody was as smart as her kids,
But were you and Judy in the same class? She was a little younger, wasn't she?
She's 2 years younger than I am.
2 years younger.
So she was a year or two behind me. Mm-hmm. I was in the seventh grade or eighth grade, but there were eight of us in the eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember them all. So Nevin Steiner was one of them. Of course, Nevin and I never got along because we were the only two boys that weren't related to every other girl in the colony. All the other boys were related to all the girls. So. Yeah, I had the heck of a crush on Janet Hertzler, but she had this beautiful blonde hair and nice figure. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't have any use for me.
Yeah.
But it was, but they're on the sessions at Aunt Naomi's for mm-hmm. something else. I remember going there one time and they pulled out this box, opened it up, and it was a lid on it. And by golly, it was a record player. No, it was more than that. They had these records you could buy that had two holes, one in the center and one offset.
Right.
You could cut a record on it.
Hmm.
Had a horn that acted as the speaker to,
right.
And you would record it, and then you could play back. And they made records on that thing.
For heaven's sakes.
And I remember sitting there with Annabelle, and they're playing, and I mean, they were good. And I remember Chester, his hips bobbing while he's playing the fiddle. You know, just, but the harmonies, the music, it was just, of course, you didn't do it at school, but I mean, at church, but you sure did it at home.
Yeah.
And one last thing on that is Marvin was quite a singer.
Oh, really? Did he play an instrument or just sang?
No, he just sang.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie played the guitar. I remember him playing the ukulele, too. But Marvin, you know, he was quite the jokester.
Mm-hmm.
He was always in trouble with somebody. But one time he and a couple other guys in the colony, they took a loudspeaker and put it on top of the car and hooked it up to a microphone or system in the car somehow, and it drove through the colony with Marvin singing country music with all the gusto he could muster. Marvin was quite the ladies' man. Mama was working in Lerner's shop in Norfolk,
mm-hmm.
and Marvin was a delivery for something. But he worked some kind of delivery thing. It was multi-floored. He would make a date with every girl or a girl on each floor for the same Saturday night, but space them half an hour apart.
For heaven's sake.
He would go pick up the first one. If she didn't want to go where he wanted to go, he'd dump her and go get the next one.
Mm-hmm.
They all knew it, but they still would accept a date with him because he was fun.
Mm-hmm.
He was a jokester, you know, and he was feisty. I was surprised at his funeral that all three wives were there.
Mm-hmm.
is two ex-wives. That rarely happens.
Indeed. But there was something about him that just attracted people. People liked him.
And I remember when you all started coming along. It was you and Dale and your daddy. Your daddy had kind of he had a sense of humor too. I mean, could make good decisions business wise. And, he was dedicated to your mama. Man, I could see that how much this man loved his wife, you know. But he would take you, or Dale, flip you in the air, and catch you by your heels.
Mm-hmm.
In front of grandma. And she would darn near have a heart attack. Yeah. Johnny, he ought to kill that child. Oh, mama, he can make it. Your daddy says was, broke a leg, so what? Get up, fix it, keep going, you know. He didn't baby you.
Yeah.
And the only thing I wished, I guess, was, I remember one of the things that Mama, I came over there with Mama for, a Kefir reunion, that y'all, you know, had like a Christmas time or something, but when I had brought some youth challenge brochures with me, and that I had been working a youth challenge for a long time by that time, because I was married to Betsy.
Mm-hmm.
Married her 2 years after I started working at Youth Challenge, and I worked there for 27 years.
Mm.
They ordained me and everything. But Alan looked at the brochure, and I said, "This is what I'm doing with my life." And he looked up and looked at me up at me in shock. He said, "Stanley, none of us ever knew anything about this."
Hmm.
See, because I'd been married, divorced, and remarried.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been an alcoholic. And somebody said that Mama tried. Mom said, "You know, Johnny has nothing to do with you, but has nothing to do with you because you just can't seem to stay with any woman." Man, I never divorced anybody. They divorced me. I was trying to keep it together.
Yeah.
But when I found, you know, when you told me that your experience and what you went through, and you know, that's hard, man, because you've been through that experience. I mean, it's death and divorce carry the same stress points.
Yeah.
And two times, man, I tell you, it almost destroyed me. Actually, the second time brought me back to God.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I finally gave up, and I was single for 9 years before Betsy and I got together.
Mm-hmm. How long have you all been married now?
Let's see. We got married in 87. So it's 34 years.
34 years. Quite a while.
Yeah.
I'd say that's a keeper. What was your impression of my mother?
Of your mother? Of the very quiet... very sweet. Aunt Dana was, she was quiet, she appeared to be quiet,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it was like she'd never lose it with you kids. My impression of her was a very nurturing person,
mm-hmm.
and very dedicated to her husband. But also, she didn't look at world through a rose. To me, she didn't look at the world through rose-covered colored glasses. She saw it for what it was, but she did not let it rule who she was.
Mm-hmm.
Just a very kind person. That's what I saw. I saw your mom as, and of course I. After the last time I lived with Grandma, I was out of touch with the area. And
mm-hmm.
One of my big regrets is that I didn't keep in touch with my family. But
Growing up, I knew I had a cousin Stanley, and my impression of him was that he was tall and in the Army somewhere in Washington State. And I grew up, and that was my, until we became adults and became actually acquainted.
Yeah, my first assignment, first Air Force assignment, that was 17, was in Washington State, in a little town Caldwell. There was a radar site 22 and a half miles from town on top of a mountain, up on a mountain. And that winding road, it was supposedly 8 air miles, but 22 road miles.
Oh, great.
And it was just south of Canada by air.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting place. The town was like 3,800 people, still is. And it was like, you know, Western movies where a person first comes into a town, everybody looks at him suspiciously.
Yeah.
Stranger in town. That's kind of the way it was.
Mm.
I was used to Southern style. You greet a person and, you know, my definition of Southern hospitality was this joke I heard some years ago. Two men standing on a street corner and they're talking. Third man comes up. The two stops. Why, Bill, how you doing? Uh-huh. How's your family, Bill? Yes, and that dog of yours? And they talk to him so sweet and nice. And they say, okay, Bill, we'll see you later. Uh-huh, take care of yourself, yeah? And then one turns to the other and says, you know, I never could stand that man.
There's a lot of truth in that.
So you're supposed to, because you were supposed to be genteel.
Mm-hmm.
And out there, no. Man, for 6 months, nobody talked to me. But I had good raising. My stepdad, when anybody wanted to think about him, treated me like his own son.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant he disciplined me as his own son. And he was too heavy-handed, but every time he disciplined me, I needed it. You know, I needed some correction.
Mm-hmm.
But he taught me, also by example, Alan. One, it was always yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. Anybody 10 years older than you are. And he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Jones was Mrs. Jones. Yeah. And Mr. Jones was Mr. Jones. I don't care if she was the Jolly Green Giant, Jolly Green Giant, or black as Ace of Spades, or white as a sheet.
Yeah.
I never once heard him call an older black person Uncle So or Aunt So. It was Mr. or Mrs.
Mm-hmm.
So, from him, and he's from Rocky Mountain, North Carolina, but he spent a lot of his time traveling the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
From him, I learned, from him and from the Mennonite Church, I learned not to be prejudiced.
Yeah.
I learned not to be that way, not to be, and to take people, my stepdad told me, he said, Stanley, he says, always take a man just as he is, as a person as they are until they prove themselves to be otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Treat them always as acceptable and everything until they prove themselves not to be.
Smart words.
And that was the way I lived my life,
mm-hmm.
you know. Another one of his, Stanley, you're not always going to like the job you have. But if your job is putting food on your table, clothes on your family's back, and a roof over the head, do it your best.
Mm-hmm.
This is a man with a third grade education.
Yeah.
He's saying, it's just work, you always do your best at your work. Work hard at it. It's because someday, you might get a job you like. And the way you've been working at the job you have that you didn't like is the way you're going to work at the new place. So if you got good work habits, you'll carry bad work. You'll carry good work habits. You got bad work habits, you're going to take bad work habits into that. So do your best, always. And if you're not the best, be one of them. You know, but he wasn't about superiority or anything. And always give respect. Always give respect. And so that I did. And why didn't I keep him? The question somebody might ask, and I've asked myself, why didn't I keep in touch with families?
Mm-hmm.
I moved 17 times in 20 years in the Air Force.
Whoa.
Now, remember now, I bounced from pillar to post as a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I came into a different environment, I had to change.
Yeah.
Change, or rather, I had to learn how to adapt to that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became a habit, and it became a way that I didn't keep. When I left an environment and went into another one, I left that other one behind. And I'm adapt to where I am and to the people I'm around,
mm-hmm.
which served me well in the military, because too many people would come from one organization, come to a new one, and they didn't like the way something was done. They'd say, mm-hmm. boy, back in my old place, you did such and such and such. I never did that.
Yeah, not what anybody wants to hear.
No, you adapt, and you do your best. So I did. And when people ask me about my background, I'd say, well, as a child, and lived with my grandma a lot, and she's Mennonite. And I said, I got a lot of cousins, I guess, and all. Aunts or uncles praying for my lost soul while I'm in the military. Because I was impressed that, you know, military people were mm-hmm. rejected and couldn't go to heaven, you know. But I still loved the faith and the people.
Yeah.
And I think it was because you could change.
Mm-hmm.
And it was accepted. Because we really believed that God could make a difference in a person's life.
Mm-hmm. And does.
Yeah.
So I got to run, Stanley.
Yep.
I've got some things to take care of, and you have given me more than enough to chew on here now. I'm sure I'll be calling you back and asking some more questions, and if you think of any more stories,
okay, bro.
Give me a holler. And I'll write it out when I get around to it and send it to you for approval before we put it in the book, if we ever write the
all
book.
Right. All right. Love you, Russ.
Love you.
I don't show it very much, but I appreciate you, Alan, because I loved your way of raising controversy, raising discussions on Facebook, and so I would let it go just so far, and then I would have to bring in the scripture.
That's not fair, you know.
Well, you know, I have to say, but that's where my ethics come from,
yep.
and that's my convictions, and I told the guys, I said, look, ultimately, you really can't prove the existence of God, except for what the Bible says about him.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes down to this. You believe the Bible by faith,
yep.
which, by the way, comes from God according to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if you really believe in the Bible, and you believe this bit that God spoke it and it happened, trust me, you got faith. Because
mm-hmm.
that's the power to look past what your eyes see.
Yeah.
You know, and it becomes your life. That was the thing I got from the Anabaptist theology growing up,
mm-hmm.
is that our faith is not just a Sunday thing.
Yeah.
That our faith is supposed to govern our entire life, business, and everything. So, be blessed, take care, and Happy New Year.
And to you, sir. We'll talk
actually,
to you
don't later. Take care. Just go with God, and you won't have to take care.
There you go. See you later.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Hey.
Yeah.
How's that relationship going?
With my wife?
Oh, you remarried?
I did.
I didn't know that. Congratulations, my friend.
No, she actually the widow. She was working for me. And she was a widow of one of my cousins, Ivan Miller's sons, one of Ivan Miller's sons. And so we kind of known each other all of our, or, you know, for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And we seemed to think alike and do alike, and we were both going through the same sorrows of having lost a mate, and that was helpful. And we, you know what, we're getting older. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
And so we did. And it's been nice.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm really happy for you, bro. I really am.
She's a good Christian woman.
That's good.
One of her daughters is a missionary or getting ready to be a missionary. And
Wow.
So it's life is strange and does some strange things sometimes, but so far it's still here, and I'm looking forward to waking up every morning.
There you go. You were faithful, and your faith paid off.
Yeah.
Be blessed.
You too.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.